Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Empty Promise podcast. My name is Chris, and today you join me and my best friend, James D. Downey, in the whole wide world.
Hello.
As we undertake episode 104 of the Empty Promise podcast. There yeah, we go. We got there in the end. Thank you, D, for having me down as your guest.
Yeah, of course.
For this podcast.
Welcome to my humble abode.
Welcome back to the visitors watching this.
Casa de mi.
Yeah.
As they call it.
What is that saying? Like, su casa e mi casa?
Yeah.
Like, your house is my house or something?
That's it,
your home? I don't know.
Mi casa, su casa.
Yeah.
But this is not your home. No. Don't forget it.
No. To everybody listening to the audio version of this podcast, the video version is available over at youtube.com if you wish to watch. And vice versa, if you're watching the video, the audio will be available on any podcast hosting service. Dee, thank you for joining me on the 26th of September.
Yeah.
We're on this day. 1580, Francis Drake completes a circumnavigation of the world, sailing into Plymouth aboard the Golden Hind.
Ah, that's so, his, yeah. His main ship.
Yep.
Is there a name for that when you have like a main ship?
No, you have like a maiden voyage on ships.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But I don't think.
Oh no, but you have like when you're the lead ship, of like
of a fleet.
Oh, the mothership?
Oh.
Is that what it is?
No, mothership's like a spaceship, isn't it?
Yeah, but maybe I mean that has to come from somewhere.
Yeah, true.
Anyway,
I don't know.
Yeah, Francis Drake, yeah, famous pirate slash not pirate.
I know Francis Drake from Uncharted.
Yeah, I know his great nephew.
Nathan
Drake.
David.
I mean, if you can believe that.
1815, Russia, Prussia, and Austria sign the Holy Alliance.
What year is this?
1815.
Oh my God, that sounds like it's an epic thing.
Yeah, it sounds big.
Holy Alliance.
Yeah. And in 1687, the City Council of Amsterdam votes to support William of Orange's invasion of England, which became the Glorious Revolution. So there you go.
Glorious William of Orange. Yep, that has particular significance to old Northern Ireland.
It does. Yep. It does.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
but we're not
did you know that Cuban leader Fidel Castro delivered a 4-hour and 29 minute long speech at the United Nations?
I did not know that. Today?
There you go.
Yeah. On this day. Oh, not today, but yeah, on this day.
Oh, it's Serena Williams' birthday today as well.
Well, that's good.
The tennis player? Yeah. It's her birthday.
Are they not twins? They're sisters, her and Venus.
No, Venus is older, I think.
Okay, okay. Yeah. I was going to say, is it not her birthday too?
No. 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 But that's all I have for on this day.
That's a lot of interesting
stuff. If you're watching the video version, you'll see that the book of lists that we normally read from is currently keeping my microphone up.
Yeah. It's multitasking.
Mm-hmm. We have, okay, yeah, just a bit of a how this episode's going to work. It's a big topic this week, Dee, when we discuss this, and we are not going to dwell on too much news this week. And we also, thanks to you wonderful people, have a boatload of community questions to get through.
A mother shipload
of community questions to get through this week. So we are really looking forward to that. So we're not going to dwell too much. If you want to give me your piece of news this week, and
I love how you validated that.
Yeah.
So the real reason we haven't got any news is because we didn't get any.
Yeah.
It's like, we got a big topic. We're going to focus on that.
It's a pretty big story. Like
the only thing that I decided to go for was to keep our Nick Cage streak running.
That's all I'd ever expect from this show. Dude.
So I got a little article from CBR.com by Ben Wasserman.
Wasserman?
Apparently, Nicolas Cage could have starred in, or should have starred in, National Treasure 3 much sooner than it possibly will be happening.
But National Treasure 3 hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened yet, but it should have happened, Chris. The reason we suspect now that it did not happen is because Big Mickey Mouse... Is it, what do you call it? Big Disney? The Mouse. That's what they call it. Yeah.
Okay.
The Mouse didn't see a profitable way of making like a theme park ride out of
National
the franchise.
Treasure.
So they didn't want to invest more money into it
unless
they were able to recoup that somehow in...
I completely forgot it was franchise.
Yeah, it's Disney, man, yeah. Yeah, they didn't feel like they were able to properly commercialize them, and they kind of shut down the
production of the third movie.
Or they didn't really
the funding.
Yeah, didn't really greenlight it or whatever. So unfortunately, National Treasure 3 didn't happen
because they couldn't get a ride built.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Because of business strategy and whatnot. But yeah, as we've mentioned before in this podcast, there has been rumblings of that occurring soon.
it coming back.
I think there's been like scripts written and stuff like that, but like scripts get written in Hollywood all the fucking time. So that's not to say it's gonna happen.
The script's probably been floating about Hollywood for years.
Oh, there's probably about 15 different versions of it. Like, but yeah, hopefully it will happen because I am a big fan of the National Treasure movies.
I'm a big fan of Nick Cage as well. So as we've discussed. Oh, did you watch Nick Cage? We said in the last podcast we would watch a Nick Cage movie
I don't think we did.
Because it was Caging the Beast thing?
No, did that ring a bell?
I completely forgot about
that. We probably did say that, but we are the home of the Empty Promise. So.
Yes. We've done something else this week. We've managed to coax our community into providing us with material to keep the podcast going.
We're no longer providing the content for this. Mm. We're just consuming yours.
Yeah.
And regurgitating it. In such a way that it seems like it was our idea.
That's a good word for the podcast today. Regurgitating.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, well, I'm not going to waste too much more time before we get stuck into the big topic, because I know you're dying to hear this story.
Oh,
dying. But before we do, remember that you can find the audio version at any podcast hosting service. And if you are listening somewhere where you are able to give us a rating, we would be very, very appreciative of that. A thumbs up, a like, a star, a comment, whatever you got to do. We would be...
Whatever feels right.
So, does my voice sound kind of off to you today?
I don't know. I think everything sounds a little off to me this morning.
Mm. My voice just sounds a little bit... I don't know.
You're not happy with it?
No, I'm not happy with it at all. And I know that I've got a long way to go.
Do you know what it is? It's the acoustics of the new environment.
Maybe.
Could be, actually. Your throat might be a little bit hoarse.
Maybe.
From some of the vitals that were consumed last night.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah, that was fantastic. We'll touch on that a little bit later on the podcast, I'm sure. But right now, what you all came for, ladies and gentlemen, I am going to take you, Dee, and the good people that listen to this, on the story of Betty and Barney Hill. Most notably known, I guess, for being the first couple to be quote-unquote abducted. Alien abduction.
By aliens.
In the US of A, 1961.
The OG.
This is the OG story.
Okay.
This is big, man. This is big. And I know I've hyped this up to you all week, but this is a fucking fascinating story.
I've definitely heard their names before.
I know you have.
Yeah. What's their name? Barney Hill and Betty Hill. Barney and Betty Hill. Like, it's so iconic. It's so American too. Barney and Betty.
It's so American. But so much of this story just doesn't...
Don't add up.
Kinda.
Don't add up, man.
So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, this is the story of Betty and Barney Hill. So, first of all, let me tell you a bit about the people themselves, okay? Well, I'll tell you a bit about the story. Betty and Barney Hill were an American couple who claimed that they were abducted by extraterrestrials in a rural portion of the state of New Hampshire from September 19th to 20th in 1961. So over the course of 24 hours.
Okay.
It was the first widely publicized report of an alien abduction in the US event. The Hills themselves...
Have eyes.
...lived in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, America. Barney was employed by the United States Postal Service, while Betty was a social worker.
Okay.
So pretty normal people, pretty average jobs at the time. Active in the local Unitarian congregation, the Hills were also members of the NAACP, which was the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Civil rights movement.
Yes. They were an interracial couple at a time when it was particularly uncommon in the United States. Barney was black, Betty was white.
All right.
Okay, yeah.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Yeah, that would have been quite, not controversial, but yeah, it wouldn't have been common at all.
No, it wasn't, no. And that's something to keep in mind, especially a little later as the story kind of reveals itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll touch back on that. Let's just get into the encounter.
Okay. Oh, I like it. The encounter.
Okay. So, September 19th, 1961, at around 10:30 p.m., the Hills were driving back to Portsmouth from a vacation in Niagara Falls in Montreal, just south of Lancaster, New Hampshire, when Betty claimed to have observed a bright point of light in the sky that moved from below the moon and the planet Jupiter. Now, this kind of stumped me as well, because I don't know, it comes up a bit in this account, how people knew that Jupiter was where it was.
Where it was.
I don't know if this is a common thing or...
I mean, you do notice like...
Well, actually...
Some stars you do know are like star planets you can't see because you're like... You know, like Venus is always like really bright in the sky, so you kind of be kind of confident. Like,
okay,
back then, whenever there was like a lot less light pollution.
Well, it's funny you should say that because either today or yesterday, I think it was yesterday, the 25th, is actually when Jupiter is the closest to Earth this year.
Oh,
in 2020. So maybe it's just something like that, you know?
Possibly.
Maybe it's around this time of year. Or
like, Jupiter's a big fucking planet, so it's probably just quite bright.
Quite a big star.
Yeah, probably like a recognizable star is probably what it is. I mean, that is, I'll agree, that is a strange way of describing its location.
Yeah. So while Barney navigated the US Route 3, Betty reasoned that she was just observing a falling star, only it started to move upward. Since it moved erratically and grew bigger and brighter, Betty urged Barney to stop the car for a closer look, as well as to walk their dog, who was with them at the time, their dog called Delcy. Barney stopped at a scenic picnic area just south of Twin Mountain.
Oh, that sounds spooky.
Twin Mountain, yeah. All the locations in this place sound just weird.
a quick footnote on that. Mm. If you've ever read Stephen King, like he sets all of his stories up in... that like New England part of America, and once you said that, it's like I'm already like imagining like this kind of like dreary kind of here? Like it's kind of like a dreary, like a wet, drab kind of environment,
right.
Like kind of, you know, like spring, no, sorry, autumn kind of
like Twin Peaks, no,
ish, yeah, ish? Okay. Yeah, like Pacific Northwest almost.
Okay,
like it rains a lot. It's not like hot. It's not like a, you know, hot American summers. Yeah. It's
okay.
Dreary, drab. It's like short days. The evening's coming in, stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay, good. Because one of my footnotes on this page was actually location, because I wanted to ask you, did you know anything about the location of Twin Mountain? But there we go. Betty, who was looking through the binoculars that they had observed, and
they are well equipped, aren't they?
Yeah.
they know the position of Jupiter. they have their binoculars.
Well, they're a middle-aged couple. They're away for a little
vacation. I guess, yeah, they were at Niagara Falls. That makes
exactly,
sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that, you know, there's one that we can check off, okay? So Betty, looking through the binoculars, observed an odd-shaped craft flashing multicolored lights travel across the face of the moon. Because, and I've also made a side note here, Dee, as to what size the moon would be here. You know the way in like different parts of the world the moon appears a good bit bigger?
Is it?
Yeah, it's like you're like, I think like the closer to the equator you are, the bigger the moon like appears in the sky.
Right.
You know? So I'm picturing the moon's quite big.
Yeah,
and this craft or whatever with flashing lights is taking up a good portion of it. Her sister actually had said several years earlier that she's seen what she thought was a flying saucer. Betty thought it might be what she was observing here now at the time. Through binoculars, Barney observed what he reasoned was a commercial airliner traveling towards Vermont on its way to Montreal. However, he soon changed his mind because without looking as if it had turned, the craft rapidly descended in his direction.
Oh dear.
This observation caused Barney to realize this object was a plane. This object that was a plane was definitely not a plane. Okay. He quickly turned the car and drove towards Franconia Notch, which is a narrow mountainous stretch of the road.
Oh dear.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh. That's not what you want to be driving.
Yeah. But there seems to be no doubts here that this is not a plane.
Yeah.
So this is definitely something.
It's moving erratically. Quickly, and it doesn't look like a plane.
And it had lights
through binoculars.
The hills claim that they continued driving on the isolated road, moving very slowly through Franconia Notch in order to observe the object as it came even closer. At one point, the object passed above a restaurant and signal tower on top of Cannon Mountain and came out near the Old Man of the Mountain. So I'm picturing these are just like big like granite cliffs, mountainous kind of. Yeah. Betty testified that it was at least 1.5 times the length of the granite cliff profile, which was around 40 feet, and that it seemed to be rotating. The couple watched as the silent, illuminated craft moved erratically and bounced back and forth in the night sky.
Yeah, that's pretty freaky. Like,
yeah, this is we're starting to get a little bit weird with this. Okay, so approximately 1 mile south of Indian Head. They said the object rapidly descended towards their vehicle, causing Barney to stop in the middle of the highway. The huge craft hovered approximately 80 to 100 feet, or 24-ish meters above the hill's Chevrolet, and filled the entire field of view in the windshield.
Holy shit.
So this thing came down, descended right in front of them. It reminded Barney of a huge pancake. Barney, who was carrying a pistol in his pocket, stepped away from the vehicle and moved closer towards it. Using the binoculars, he claimed to have seen about 8 to 11 humanoid figures who were peering out of the craft's windows, seeming to look at him. In unison, all but one figure moved to what appeared to be a panel on the rear wall of the hallway that encircled the front portion of the craft.
He could see all of this?
Yes.
Through the binoculars?
Yeah. So I'm picturing it's quite like a big glass kind of front on this almost.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's very like, yeah.
Like your stereotypical UFO. Yeah. So we see 8 to 11 humanoid figures, and they all but one move away towards the back. One remaining figure continued to look at Barney and communicated a message telling him to stay where you are and keep looking.
Like telekinetically? Telepathically?
Yes. Now, he at this time didn't know that that's what it was called, but he just couldn't seem to take his eyes away. He knew he had to continue to watch this one.
Jesus.
The silent craft approached to what Barney estimated was within 50 feet overhead and 300 feet away from him. On October 21st, 1961, Barney reported to the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomenon, or NICAP, investigator Walter Webb, that the beings were somehow not human. Okay, so this was a month later. He made that statement. Back to the actual night in question. Barney tore the binoculars away from his eyes and ran back to the car. In a hysterical state, he told Betty, "They're going to capture us."
Jesus.
Yeah. He saw the object again shift its location directly above the vehicle. He drove away at high speed, telling Betty to look for the object. She rolled down the window and looked up. Almost immediately, the hills heard a rhythmic series of beeping and buzzing noises, which they said seemed to bounce off the trunk of their vehicle. The car vibrated, a tingling sensation then passed through the hills' bodies, and the hills said that then they experienced the onset of an altered state of consciousness that left their minds dulled.
Whoa. Yeah. Also, like, turned them into, like, docile kind of creatures. Yeah.
A second series of beeping and buzzing noises returned the couple to full consciousness. They found that they had travelled nearly 35 miles south, but only had vague, spotty memories of this section of the road. They recalled making a sudden, unplanned turn, encountering a roadblock, and observing a fiery orb in the middle of the road.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. This fiery orb thing as well also seems to come up a lot in UFO and alien abduction stories. Yeah. It's very common.
It's like a ball of lightning.
Experience. Yes, exactly.
It's like a common explanation for those things.
So they only had vague, spotty memories of the 35-mile section of a road. Okay, so the aftermath. Arriving home at around dawn, the hills assert that they had some odd sensations and impulses that they could not readily explain. Betty insisted that their luggage be kept near the back door rather than in the main part of the house. Which, I mean, I think I wrote here, one must have to know Betty to understand why this would be strange.
Well, she wanted to keep her luggage at the back door
rather than bring it into the house.
Like outside in the back door?
Just at the back door.
Maybe she's looking to make a quick getaway.
Mm. Both of their watches would never work again. Barney said that the leather strap for the binoculars was torn, though he could not recall it tearing. The toes of his best dress shoes were scraped, and Barney says that he was compelled to examine his genitals in the bathroom.
Well, aren't we all, Barney?
Like, what would bring that on? You know? Why? That's what I just wrote down here. Why?
What's interesting is, like, why would you attribute that to...
what
like,
has happened.
Yeah, it's like, kind of... like, that's the thing you notice. It's like, I'm staring at my genitals.
Yeah.
I never used to do this.
Exactly.
Must have been aliens. But it's a strange thing to spot, like...
Exactly. The hills say they tried to reconstruct the chronology of the events as they witnessed the UFO and drove home. Immediately after they heard the buzzing sounds, their memories became incomplete and fragmented. After sleeping for a few hours, Betty awoke and placed the shoes and clothing she had worn during the drive home into her closet, observing that the dress was torn at the hem, zipper, and lining. Later, when she retrieved the items from her closet, she noticed a pinkish powder on the dress. She hung the dress on the clothesline, and the pink powder eventually blew away. Over the years, 5 laboratories have conducted chemical and forensic analysis on this dress. There were shiny concentric circles on the car's trunk that had not been there the previous day, and Betty and Barney experimented with a compass, noting that when they moved it close to the spots, the needle would whirl rapidly, but when they moved it a few inches away, it would drop down.
Back to normal. Mm-hmm.
I've also made a footnote here as to why you would feel the need to experiment with a compass, though. What would draw that, you know?
Like, what made you specifically think this is magnetism or exactly. something like that?
I mean, their watches aren't working, which is one thing. And Betty's dress is ripped. Barney's shoes are scuffed.
That would make sense. Like, that's like, how did that happen? Like, mm-hmm. But you see the bumps in the back of your car, and you're like, get the compass, dear. Yeah. Although, I mean, they are, you know, from the sounds of it, they seem like a bit of an orienteering couple. Like, binoculars up in Niagara
Outdoorsy, maybe some bird watching and seeing the sights.
They may just genuinely have had a compass and noticed.
Maybe
you
they
know.
Have a compass, but I don't get why they would feel the need to bring it close to these concentric circles on the
car. You know,
if
they had it on their person and they were getting out of the car, they're bringing it close to the car and they notice our compass is fucked.
Okay.
And then, you know, from a bit of
that's a good point.
Experimentation.
Yeah. Okay, so they made an initial report then to the US Air Force and NICAP. NICAP being the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena.
Yep.
On the 21st, September 21st, Betty telephoned Peace Air Base to report the UFO encounter. Through for fear of being labelled eccentric, she withheld some of the details.
Mm-hmm.
On September 22nd, Major Paul W. Henderson telephoned the Hills for a more detailed interview. Henderson's report, dated September 26th, determined that the Hills had probably misidentified the planet Jupiter.
Oh, come on.
That's a big miss it, yeah.
Yeah, like that's a bit insulting, nearly.
Yeah, I know, like, exactly.
Because they specified its position in relation to the planet Jupiter.
Yeah.
Right?
His report was forwarded to the Project Blue Book, the US Air Force's UFO research project.
That's an interesting topic.
Yes.
Project Blue Book, we should look into that as well.
Just a side note on NICAP. NICAP was... mainly present from 1950 to 1980s. It's still active, but it only really serves as an informational depository on UFO.
Oh yeah,
they don't look in. You know, you can request information. I think about these cases, but they don't kind of investigate these cases as much, or even at all anymore. Within days of the encounter, Betty borrowed a UFO book from a local library. It had been written by retired Marine Corps Major Donald E. Kehoe, who was also the head of NICAP. On September...
Oh, that's interesting.
On September 26th, Betty wrote to Kehoe. She related the full story this time, and she wrote that she and Barney were considering hypnosis to help recall what had happened. Her letter was eventually passed on to Walter N. Webb, who was a Boston astronomer and NICAP member. Webb met with the Hills on the 21st of October, 1961, and in a 6-hour interview, the Hills related all they could remember of the UFO encounter. Barney asserted that he had developed a sort of mental block, and he suspected that there would be some portions of the event that he did not wish to remember.
Shit.
He described in detail all that he could remember about the craft, the appearance of the somehow not human figures aboard the craft, and Webb stated that they were definitely telling the truth and the incident probably occurred exactly as they reported, except for some minor uncertainties and technicalities that must be tolerated in any such observations where human judgment is involved. So things such as the exact length of time, distance away, appearance of
things you can
objects.
Just never be sure of.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So they've made this report now to the US Air Force and to NICAP. And Betty's kind of looking into UFOs. This is what she's starting to believe was actually
this
happening.
Is the explanation for all this weirdness.
Okay, this is where it gets really messed up to you, okay? Because Betty starts having dreams.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So 10 days after the alleged UFO encounter, Betty began having a series of vivid dreams. Never in her memory had she recalled dreams in such detail and intensity, but they stopped abruptly after 5 nights and never returned.
Hmm.
When she finally did mention them to Barney, he was sympathetic, but not too concerned. And the matter was dropped.
Okay, so you had dreams. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But why was... I've made a side note as well. Why was Barney not concerned? You know, because she's starting to have these very vivid dreams. You know, a wife relates them to her husband who was also there, who was present.
Yeah, had the same thing. Events.
And he was sympathetic, but he was kind of like, yeah.
He's been mind controlled, so, Chris. I don't know, though. I mean, yeah.
Maybe it's just something he doesn't wish to remember.
Yeah, maybe it's just like, I don't want to be reliving this constantly. Like, but yeah, if he wasn't concerned, I don't know. Maybe he's just... I don't think it's like kind of like he's intentionally like downplaying it. I think he's probably just doesn't want to relive it anyway.
Well, in November 1961, Betty began writing down the details of her dreams.
Oh dear.
In one dream, she and Barney encountered a roadblock and men who surrounded the car. She lost consciousness but struggled to regain it. She then realized that she was being forced by two small men to walk in a forest in the nighttime, and of seeing Barney walking behind her, though when she called to him, he seemed to be in a trance or sleepwalking. The man stood about 5 feet to 5 feet 4 inches tall and wore matching blue uniforms with caps similar to those worn by military cadets.
Okay, that's interesting.
Now, one of the biggest theories to come out of this whole thing is that military were involved.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I would definitely consider because they did... They've done crazy shit like that before, and I wouldn't put it past.
In the dreams, Betty, Barney, and the men walked up a ramp into a disc-shaped craft of metal appearance. Barney said pancake, so disc-shaped. Once inside, Betty and Barney were separated. She protested and was told by the man she called the leader that if she and Barney were examined together, it would take much longer to conduct the exams. She and Barney were then taken to separate rooms.
Fuck.
So they're now being examined.
Yeah.
Which is...
That's a scary thing to hear as well. Examined.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
What does that mean?
Exactly. What does that mean? Yeah.
Cut open, fucking, you know? Yeah. Oh my God.
So Betty then dreamt that a new man, similar to the others, entered to conduct her exam with the leader. Betty called this new man the examiner and said he had a pleasant, calm demeanor. Though the leader and the examiner spoke to her in English, the examiner's command of the language seemed imperfect and she had difficulty understanding him.
Oh.
Yeah. So what I'm getting from this is they're speaking and she's picking it up as English, but they're not talking English.
Well, no, because she says, but this is, if they're speaking in a different language and she's perceiving it as English, why would she struggle to understand what the examiner is saying? Because, you know, if that mechanism is at play, then... You know, you would just assume that she just hear everything perfectly.
Yeah.
But this guy had like an accent or something. Like this guy didn't, you know, have a full command of the language. So part of me is thinking like, is this like a Russian? My mind jumps to Russian when I think of this right stuff. Because I'm like...
So you're still in this military Russian scientists, kind of
mindset? Yeah. Oh, yeah, working. Because this is the 60s. So it's kind of just before Cold War kind of kicked off.
That thought never occurred to me, believe it or not. Yeah.
But it didn't that like, it really ramped up around that time.
Yeah.
The Cold War. So, yeah, I mean, like...
Okay. Well, he seated her on a chair, and a bright light was shone on her. The man cut off a lock of Betty's hair. He examined her eyes, ears, mouth, teeth, throat, and hands. He saved trimmings from her fingernails. And the man then used a dull knife, similar to a letter opener, to scrape some of her skin onto what resembled cellophane.
It's a pretty medical thing. That sounds like it sounds like a scalp and a little.
Yeah, just taking little shavings of her skin.
Okay.
Like a DNA sample. He then tested her nervous system, and he thrust a needle into her navel or belly button, which caused Betty agonizing pain. Whereupon the leader then waved his hand in front of her eyes, and the pain vanished. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The examiner left the room and Betty engaged in conversation with the leader. She picked up a book with rows of strange symbols that the leader said she could take home with her. She also asked where he came from, and he pulled down an instructional map dotted with stars.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. In Betty's dream account, the men began escorting the hills from the ship when a disagreement broke out. The leader then informed Betty that she could not keep the book, stating that they had decided that the other man did not want her to even remember this encounter. She and Barney were taken to the car, where the leader suggested that they wait to watch the craft's departure. They did so, and then resumed their drive home. Yeah.
This is mad.
Yeah.
But this is her dream, right?
This is her dream sequence. Yeah. Yeah,
basically. Kind of recounting this lost period of time.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Yeah, what are you thinking so far?
Yeah, I think, like... Part of the skeptic in me is like it is a dream at the end of the day, like a lot of that could be completely imagined, right?
Of course.
But at the same time, I do believe that dreams are like your subconscious mind kind of takes control when you're dreaming, because your brain lets its guards down and it's kind of working subconsciously. So things that you have been
subject
told to forget or made to forget
will suddenly they linger, come back up.
So like shit like that happens all the time, and you like, and you know, we've all had dreams of like things that have happened in our past before, and like of things that happened the previous day, and your brain kind of does shit to like turn them into something. So I can also see how an account of something much less like weird, like with a lot less aliens and a lot less stuff, could have happened, and then this has all been like transposed on a via the dream, but like. Yeah. Something happened. Like they lost hours, didn't they? Right.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? What do you think? Before I go into that, what do you think of this whole? He pulled down an instructional map dotted with stars. I wrote down. It seems very convenient.
Convenient.
Yeah.
So
just like here.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Here we have it. Here's our map. Yeah.
This is where we came from.
But see, this is kind of where the dream stuff comes in, because maybe it was like.
Maybe so, it wasn't a map. Maybe it was.
Yeah, it could have been anything, or it could literally have been like, "Where are you from?" And he just answers. But now, like. Because you're regurgitating that information in your brain, so it's kind of like a more efficient way to do that in my dream is just go, oh, here's a map, or something like that. Because, like, you know, it's not going to be, it is a dream. It's definitely not a like-for-like recount of what happened, right?
Well, we'll see. This star map will come back into play before the story's end. So, missing time, D. On November 25th, 1961, the Hills were again interviewed at length by NICAP members, this time C.D. Jackson and Robert E. Hone. These people have fantastic names.
Yeah.
although the Hills had noted that they arrived home later than anticipated, the drive should have taken them about 4 hours to cover the 178 miles. That's them driving at about 45 miles an hour.
Okay, yeah.
They claim not to have realized that they arrived home 7 hours after their departure from Coldwork. When Homan and Jackson noted this discrepancy to the Hills, the couple had no explanation for the lost time, a phenomenon ufologists call missing time.
So they didn't even realize
that they had lost hours.
Because I guess their watches were busted, right?
Yeah.
And they just got home and they just assumed.
Yeah.
That is bizarre.
Yeah, so the length of time that it should have taken them to get home, like, they surpass that by hours.
By, like, 3 hours.
They can't recall. They can't account for that missing time.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The cynic in me again is going, that's also convenient.
But there's also, like, strange symbols on their car, you know.
But they can't remember what happened, right? Yeah.
I know.
That's insane.
Yeah. The Hills claim to recall almost nothing of the 35 miles on Route 3 between Lincoln and Indian Head and Ashland. Both claim to recall an image of a fiery orb sitting on the ground. Betty and Barney reasoned that it must have been the moon, but Homan and Jackson informed them that the moon had set earlier in the evening.
Mad.
Yeah. This is something else I wanted to pick up as well. Were there no other cars in this highway?
Do you know what? I was reading that book lately, the Stephen King one, where he goes back to the 1960s. Yeah. And yeah, like highways were like...
Just
compared to what we expect on like a motorway.
Yeah.
Nowhere near that.
Really? Like, just desolate?
Like, yeah, because America, like, right, is massive,
mm-hmm.
and they just built all these highways to link all the big cities together. Yeah. But like you heard there, it's a 178-mile trip, like, and not many people are making those type of journeys apart from holiday goers and shit.
Especially
like that.
At night, yeah,
exactly. So like, yeah, a lot of the time the highways are just completely empty. Like,
okay, true. The subject of hypnosis came up, and it was decided that it should be carried out in order to elicit previously irretrievable memories. Barney was apprehensive about hypnosis, but thought it might help Betty put to rest what Barney described as the nonsense about her dreams.
Ooh, so he is really dismissive.
He's starting to really, he seems almost like aggressive. Not aggressive, but kind of, you know, this is...
It's like, oh yeah, I was concerned at first, but now this is dragging on. But yeah, it's strange because he had the same weird shit happen mm-hmm. to him. So you wonder why he's not more sympathetic.
So the first private disclosure happened on November 23rd, 1962. The Hills attended a meeting at the parsonage of their church, where the invited guest speaker was Captain Ben H. Sweat of the United States Air Force, who had recently published a book of his poetry. After he read sections of his poetry, the pastor asked him to discuss his personal interests in hypnosis. After the meeting broke up, the Hills approached Captain Sweat privately and told him what they could remember of their strange encounter. He was particularly interested in the missing time aspect of the Hills' account.
Hmm.
On March 3rd, 1963, the Hills' first publicity discussed the UFO encounter with a group at their church. This is 18 months after.
Okay. This whole thing. So they've been keeping this kind of themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Which kind of leads me to think, like, actually, no, we'll get back to that, yeah. On September 7th, 1963, Captain Sweat returned and gave a formal lecture on hypnosis to a meeting at the Unitarian Church. After the lecture, the Hills told him that Barney was going to a psychiatrist. Captain Sweat suggested that Barney ask this psychiatrist, Mr. Stevens, about the use of hypnosis in his case.
So Barney's going to a psychiatrist. Yeah. I wonder, is that like related to the... So we kind of talked about he's experienced this weird shit too, mm-hmm. but he's kind of dismissive of what his wife is talking about. Yeah. But maybe he's having something similar and he's just dealing with it in a different way.
True, right now.
And she's dealing with... She had dreams and kind of has like...
She seems to have a lot more... Like a much more extreme account. Would that be the word? Extreme way of like retelling the tale.
Yeah, she's vividly like reliving it.
Yes, it's much more vivid for her. That's what I want to say.
Or with him, it's kind of like something's locked in there.
Yeah, weird. Something's telling him like you don't need to relive this.
Something's there though.
Yeah.
Seems like anyway.
When Barney next met with Stevens, he asked about hypnosis. Stevens referred the Hills to Benjamin Simon of Boston. So this is now taking them all over the USA. Yeah. The Hills first met Simon on December 14th, 1963. Early in their discussions, Simon determined that the UFO encounter was causing Barney far more worry and anxiety than he was willing to admit. Simon hoped to uncover more about the experience through hypnosis. So that kind of explains a little bit about Barney's like willingness to cooperate.
Yeah, and I like the way they've kind of like highlighted like it's affecting you a lot more than you're willing to recognize, or willing to admit. And it probably explains why he's been dismissive of Betty's accounts dreams, as well.
So Simon began hypnotizing the Hills on January 4th, 1964. He hypnotized Betty and Barney several times each, and the sessions lasted until June 6th. So that's 5 months of hypnosis, which is quite extensive. Yeah. Simon conducted the sessions on Barney and Betty separately, so they could not overhear one another's recollections. Simon hypnotized... Okay, so this is getting into the actual sessions, okay? Simon hypnotized Barney first. His recall of witnessing non-human figures was quite emotional. Expressions of fear, emotional outbursts, and incredulity... Barney said that due to his fear, he kept his eyes closed for much of the abduction and physical examination. Under hypnosis, Barney reported that the binocular strap had broken when he ran from the UFO back to his car. He recalled driving the car away from the UFO, but that afterwards he felt irresistibly compelled to pull off the road and drive into the woods.
Jesus.
He eventually sighted six men standing in the dirt road. The car stalled and three of the men approached the car. They told Barney not to fear them. He was still anxious, however, and he reported that the leader told Barney to close his eyes.
My God.
Yeah. Yeah. Is this the same leader person?
This is freaky.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Six men just compelled to drive into a dirt road.
Car stalled. Six men standing in the dirt road. Like... Barney describes the beings as generally similar to Betty's hypnotic... not dream recollection.
Mm.
The beings often stared into his eyes, said Barney, with a terrifying, mesmerizing effect. Under hypnosis, Barney said things like, "Oh, those eyes, they're in my brain."
Oh dear.
Barney related that he and Betty were taken onto the disc-shaped craft where they were separated. He was escorted to a room by three of the men and told to lie on a small rectangular exam table. Unlike Betty, Barney's narrative of the exam was less detailed as he continued to keep his eyes closed for most of the exam. A cup-like device was placed over his genitals. He did not experience an orgasm, though Barney thought that a sperm sample had been taken.
Jesus.
The man scraped his skin and peered into his eyes and mouth. Someone felt his spine and seemed to be counting his vertebrae.
What mm-hmm. the fuck?
Betty reported a conversation with the leader that she understood in English. Barney said that he heard them speaking in a mumbling language that he did not understand, yet he also understood them in English, which is weird.
So, yeah. So
he heard them speaking in a mumbling language he did not understand, but he also understood them in English.
So, yeah, there was like some sort of communication, yeah. Not normal.
Exactly. The few times that they communicated with him, Barney said it seemed to be through transference, as he described it. At the time, he was unfamiliar with the word telepathy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
He recalled being escorted from the ship and then taken to his car. Betty's sessions then. Under hypnosis, Betty's account was similar to the events in her five dreams of the UFO abduction, but there were also notable differences. Mainly pertaining to her capture and release. The short man had a significantly different physical appearance from that of her dreams. The sequential order of the abduction event was also different from Betty's dream account. Betty exhibited considerable emotional distress during her capture and examination. Simon actually ended one session early because there were tears flowing down her cheeks and she appeared distressed.
Oh God.
We're getting there, dude. We're getting
That's
there.
Mad, though.
Simon gave Betty the post-hypnotic suggestion that she could sketch a copy of the star map that she later described as a three-dimensional projection similar to a hologram.
Jesus.
Now, this is in the 1960s.
Yeah, like yeah. even having a concept of a three-dimensional projection like yeah. a hologram, like that's...
Although she said the map had many stars, she drew only those that stood out in her memory. Her map consisted of 12 prominent stars connected by lines and three lesser ones that formed a distinctive triangle. She said she was told the stars connected by solid lines formed trade routes, whereas the dashed lines were to less traveled stars.
That's insane.
Where'd she pull that from? You know?
Yeah.
So after the hypnosis sessions, Simon speculated that Barney's recollection of the UFO encounter was possibly a fantasy inspired by Betty's dreams.
Yeah, that's one thing that I was thinking is like she has told him about her dreams before, so like that's in his head, mm-hmm. True. You know. And that yeah. you know, I don't know. Like, I'm not 100% familiar with what hypnosis is, mm-hmm. but like if it's kind of making you in a suggestive place mentally, yeah. you know, you could be plucking things that are kind of true. Like then he wants me to tell the story of the abduction. Oh, I've heard the story of the abduction. He just retells it yeah. and kind of adds his own spin to it. So that could be that, possibly.
Simon thought that this was the most reasonable and consistent explanation. Barney, however, rejected this idea, noting that while their memories were consistent in some regards, there were also portions of both of the narratives that were quite unique to each. Barney was now ready to accept that they had been abducted by the occupants of a UFO, though he never embraced it as fully as Betty did.
Mm-hmm.
Though the Hills and Simon disagreed about the nature of the case, they all concurred that the hypnosis sessions were effective and the Hills were no longer tormented by anxiety about their experience.
It's kind of, I like the way that Barney has done like a bit of a 180 in that he's now like accepted.
He's accepting that this happened.
You know, yeah. something happened. Yeah. He was hiding before and now he's not. So like he's kind of made this realization that something happened
yeah.
that I was not dealing with and now he's dealt with it. So I mean, that kind of, does it give more, you know, does it prove it anymore that what they're saying happened? Probably not, but it is interesting that he's kind of switched
yeah.
his opinion.
Well, to sum it up, the Hills went back to their regular lives. They were willing to discuss the alleged UFO encounter with friends, family, and the occasional UFO researcher, but the Hills made no effort to speak publicly,
okay.
which I've noted that. Like they were never in this for publicity.
Yeah.
So it seems anyway.
Gives them yeah. a little bit of credibility because yeah.
and especially having being an interracial couple like that
they don't want that publicity.
No, they don't yeah. want that publicity.
Yeah. yeah. That's a fair point as well. Yeah. yeah. And they did they kept it to themselves like they really kept it to themselves for months.
Yeah.
before even seeking out.
Which kind of like lends help. A bit of credibility to their story or their account.
I mean, like, what did they do? The first thing they did was they notified the authorities, like the NICAP.
NICAP and the Air Force.
They notified the authorities. That led to nothing, but they left it for 3 months before they, you know, pursued it any further. So, like, I mean, in my mind, yeah, it definitely gives them a bit of credibility, because if it was completely plucked out of their ass, they completely made the entire story up, they have either executed it really well.
Perfectly, yeah.
Or, I mean, I don't think it is, because...
I mean, I don't know if you can fake hypnosis all that well, either. Well, I don't know how it works.
I'd say you probably could. Yeah.
You think?
I think, like, if you decided, oh, I'm going to... To be fair, now...
Oh, yeah, like, if you went to hypnotize me and I just went, oh, yeah, it's like, working.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But I guess this guy, this... The hypnotist would probably recognize who's genuine and who's not. Yeah. But again, I'm not 100% that a hypnotist is not faking the whole thing anyway.
True.
Yeah, but you know.
But what's the gain out of it, I guess, you know? You know, what have they got to gain out of...
At that point.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and they're keeping it to themselves, even after all this has been revealed. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not...
It's not like they're trying to sell their story.
Exactly, and, you know, they've got their story. They've got a hypnotist who can agree with it. They've got these UFOologists, these NICAP people who can
confirm
it. It's
already taken them all over the United States.
Exactly.
And publicity is not really something they want. They just want to keep themselves to themselves. We've seen earlier on that Barney was kind of almost just wanted to push the whole thing to one side and get on with his life. Well, on October 25th, 1965, a front page story in the Boston Traveler asked, UFO chiller, did they seize couple? Reporter John H. Luttrell of the Traveler had allegedly been given an audio tape recording of the lecture that the Hills made in Quincy Center in late 1963.
Ooh.
On October 26th, United Press International, or UPI, picked up Luttrell's story and earned the Hills international attention, which they did not want. Later in life, Betty claimed to have seen another number of UFOs after her initial abduction, and she became somewhat of a celebrity in the UFO community. Barney died of a cerebral hemorrhage on February 25th, 1969, at age 46.
A cerebral hemorrhage.
Betty died of cancer on October 17th, 2004, at age 85, having never remarried.
Oh, that's sad.
So Barney died like 3 years after the whole thing was like dusted
yeah.
off.
Well, no, 69.
Yeah, well, yeah. They're, yeah, so their sessions, their hypnosis sessions started in like, what, 64?
So he was living with that for with 4 years, yeah. 3 years-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a heavy thing to carry. But like, I don't know, a cerebral hemorrhage, I mean, that's one of those things.
It just happens, a hemorrhage. Yeah, it's just a bleed. Basically.
But yeah, when you hear cerebral...
It's a bleed in the brain.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's like, yeah, there's like two big veins. No, that's a different thing. But anyway, when you hear that sound, I'm like kind of like, he was abducted by someone examined them and stuck needles and shit in them, and then he dies of a brain hemorrhage. Like,
a couple of years later. I don't know if like stress and panic can bring on these things.
Yeah,
as
I'm pretty sure. I mean, like, stress just fucks up your whole
everything. Yeah,
your whole like blood circulation. Yeah. So like, I'm not gonna say it. I'm not a doctor, so I'm not saying it did have an effect, but it certainly seems like it would not have helped. Those 9 years of his life, four of them, he was dealing with some heavy shit.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, there is another piece on this story, D, but I think I'm going to save it to a later day. It's a separate topic on its own. It's the analyzing of the star map that Betty drew.
Because
it gained like phenomenal traction all over the world. People analyzing it, breaking it down. But we'll talk about that at a different time.
Did they ever find any kind of like, you know, this is these stars?
They found different stars. They found that some of the stars must represent Earth, Sun... different planets. It seemed to match a star, double star system of Zeta Reticuli. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but this case is also known as like the Zeta Reticuli abduction or something.
Okay.
But,
that's interesting.
Yeah, that's a big topic on its own, but I think we'll leave the actual abduction there. It's a crazy story.
That's absolutely
insane.
It's insane. It's interesting, so they did eventually blow up in the press.
They did.
A couple of years after.
Yeah.
But, like, that was another thing, sorry. Kind of unrelated, but you said Betty became a bit of a celebrity.
Yes.
In the UFO.
She became a celebrity, but I looked into that a little bit as well. She gave, well, the two of them actually gave a lecture in front of UFOlogists and UFO fans, where basically she retold her story, but she was actually booed and jeered off the stage.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she wasn't well accepted in the UFO.
Did they think she was just making it up?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's pretty mad.
Yeah, like, so they just wanted to keep themselves as themselves. Well, so it seems, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, even with
the whole, with the whole story, like, you know, they were never really seemed in it for the publicity, the money, that, like, comes with it.
Did they make any money off
of
this?
No. There is a book not written by them called An Interrupted Journey. I forget who wrote it. Maybe I have it.
But yeah, it's not their... They're not...
Fuller. John G. Fuller.
They're not going to be getting royalties from that.
No.
Like, yeah.
No.
That's insane.
It's crazy. It's one of the most prominent UFO or alien abduction cases ever seen.
And
there's so much, like,
so the idea, the concept of an abduction, like an alien abduction, was this already a thing before this, or was this like the genesis?
This was the genesis. This was the first big one. I think maybe one or two. Well, I don't know. I'm not going to say that one or two had happened, but this was the first published.
Yeah, like, this is the one that became popular.
It was the first widely publicized report. Yeah.
So I mean, like, even there, you're kind of thinking, did they get the idea from somebody?
Yeah.
And go and hoax the whole thing.
Well,
if this is the first widely popularized one, then no.
But we did hear that Betty's sister had said that she had seen something previously.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but you, like, UFO sightings, yeah, they're like, I mean, if you want to talk about...
You see a shooting star, see anything that is there's unidentified. There's all this
time. Exactly. Like, and, you know, people spot UFOs, unidentified flying objects, all the time. And that's fine, because there's stuff in the sky that we don't even know about.
Yeah.
Like military shit like that, shooting stars.
Everything.
Exactly,
Yeah, but a proper abduction, that's a different story.
Completely different. And this is saying that there are people in those flying contraptions coming down and taking people, examining them and then shooting them, spitting them back out. Like, that is...
Communicating through telepathy... That account, though, as you said, of Barney's is proper chilling, like being not forced, but coaxed into driving down a forest road, car stalling, six men appear on the road.
Close your eyes, come Jesus, with us.
Man, yeah, that's some crazy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like, and it's very, if it is a hoax, it's very inspired.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'll do some... homework on this, hopefully for the next podcast, to find out if there's, like, was the idea of an alien abduction
a thing?
Was it there? Like, was it in a book somewhere? Or did it exist? Or is this completely original? Like, this came from them.
Yeah, the idea of abduction.
Because if it just came from them, like, I have to say, like, I'm much more leaning towards the fact that something genuinely happened to them.
I don't know. Like some of the things that you read about the whole, like, examination, like lying on a little like platform, like a little table, taking skin samples, you know, interested in their spines and their genitalia and all. It's very what we come to know, what we consider nowadays is like
it's almost cliche.
Yes. But I don't think that I don't think that was too widely like publicized before this happened.
That was like the inspiration for it.
Yeah.
See, like, I think in terms of aliens, I'm not convinced.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's way more likely, if something did happen, I think it's way more likely that it was some sort of military government operation. Yeah. Like even that, like, I'm not saying like that's super common, either, that there's military and governments doing this stuff. Yeah. It did, like, there are cases of, like, I mean, MK Ultra, the CIA did stuff like that. They're like, tuck people, they fucking fill them full of LSD to try and mind control them. Like, that genuinely happened. There's evidence for that.
Yeah, Charles Manson was one of those people.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Like, all this shit, like, this stuff happened. Like, it could be something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I don't know. Yeah, what would they have to gain off it, or what would they have to, you know, what is the...
Yeah, I don't see the motivation. From all the information we have here, I don't see the motivation behind making it up. for monetary or publicity or
no.
You know,
I think, but what do the military, what would the military have to gain off of that? You know, what kind of tests were even carried out? You know, were they still monitoring the hills?
Yeah,
if it was,
they could have been filling them full of drugs or something like that to see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. They're still watching them. Yeah, yeah. What explains the strange markers on the car,
yeah.
the time that they can't account for, yeah. The broken watches.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I mean, like, that's all stuff that they could have, like if this was humans who planned to do this, like, mm-hmm. they would have done, like, oh, let's break their watches so that they don't have it. You know, they don't know what, have a good recollection of what's happening. The car thing, I mean, this is just completely just coming to me. The trackers, maybe, that's where the compasses were messed up. Yeah. There's, like, electronics in it that were tracking it or something like that.
This is the 60s, though, as well.
I know, yeah, mm-hmm. but, like, even back then, like, they had, like,
they
had satellites and stuff, didn't they? Well, maybe not. No, I'm a bit too early, am I?
I don't know.
But they'd have
things. That's something, yeah. I mean, we don't even know what the military
is. I'm completely guessing what those things were, but here's my opinion on the whole thing.
Yes.
I think I'm leaning towards something happened.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right?
100%. Yeah.
I don't think they made it up.
No.
I think it's not extraterrestrial, though. I'm not convinced by that, because
even after all the Bob Lazar stuff? And
yeah, Bob Lazar, like, as much as I want to believe what he's saying.
I do believe.
I don't know.
I'm a good 95% of the way there with Bob Lazar.
He's like the only half convincing one, though.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of his stuff just seems like you probably could have just made that up.
Guys, in case you're listening to this and you're wondering who the hell Bob Lazar is, we have a podcast on him.
We do.
Previously back. We'll just plug that right now. You can go and check that out.
It's a good one, too.
There's also a fantastic documentary on Netflix about Bob Lazar.
Yeah.
If you want
to get into that. He's very similar to these guys, though. And it's kind of like, he'll make you doubt, he'll make you consider him as a genuine case because he gained very little from it. Like, you know, he was like his perspective is that he was a whistleblower. He's trying to, you know, inform people about this crazy shit. But I'm still not convinced that any of it's like extraterrestrial.
No.
I just think like something like that, like if there was aliens floating about, more than one couple would have seen them. Because it didn't seem like they were being very stealthily.
Well, as you say as well, like big open highways.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Not many cars on the road.
I just think like an alien operation of abducting people. I mean, unless they just did two,
mm-hmm.
and they never came back again. I just think it
could have just been the government and they tried to cover it up as an alien abduction.
I've always maintained that. I think the government, the biggest like pushers of like the US UFO sightings and alien conspiracies are the governments who have like, you know, classified aircraft and like advanced technology that they're testing and people see, mm-hmm. and they're like, that could be a genuine problem.
Yeah.
If someone spots a classified plane that they haven't released to the public yet, that they don't want anyone to know about. So they go like, oh no, there was UFOs spotted in this area all the time.
Yeah.
This flying saucers, blah, blah, blah. Make up all this nonsense.
Jobs out.
Exactly. Yeah, and then the guy who actually spotted something genuine and he wants to tell the public, they're fucking...
like the boy who cried wolf. Like,
exactly. Yeah. You say that, you get lost in the noise. I've always maintained that. I still think that. And even to this day, they're quite happy to never like shut down the myth of UFOs,
know,
because
yeah.
they want that kind they of hysteria. Want
that cover. It's good cover for them.
It is good cover for them. And even this, like this type of stuff, I think, like, you know, like,
isn't that what, like, that's what we discussed about Roswell as well, that they were doing that, is they could have been testing.
Yeah, we have a podcast on Roswell. We go do. Check that one out.
Plugging all the episodes today.
Yeah, I think that was like a big.
Was it just a weather balloon
theory? Yeah, it was like they were doing the weird.
Testing.
They were doing weird shit in Roswell, so they wanted like. As soon as whatever happened, they wanted the idea of UFO spaceman to be the story rather than they're testing something in Roswell to be the story.
I don't know. Like, I'm very much with you on this Hill case that, like, I believe something happened. I do not believe they made that up, not even for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not I believe it's, like, quote-unquote aliens, I don't know. I think it's a lot more plausible that it is government.
Mm-hmm.
And especially as you're saying, there could have been maybe different sounding, different speaking, different nationalities of government. That's why, you know, their voices couldn't have been
the Russians
understood. Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. It is
but
hard.
Some
to
of
say.
It just doesn't add up completely. You know, like the weird markings in cars, magnetic kind of poles.
Yeah, it could just be completely. It could be a dream.
Yep,
could have been all made up.
It could all be complete bullshit.
You know what? And sometimes I think about these things as well. Like they could have been driving through Like
they could have been tripping on some hard drugs.
There could have been something that happened in the forest that day, and these mushrooms fucking vaporized or went into the air, and they were just tripping balls the whole way home, and they were imagining all this shit.
What happened? Like, why did the dog not go mad in the car?
They had a dog. Never even heard about the dog.
There was no account of it. Yeah.
What did they do with the dog?
I know.
I mean, if they can make a human docile, they can make a dog docile. True. But like, that is. I want to hear the dog's account.
Yeah, the dog's
account. Just hypnotize the dog.
Imagine what the dog would know.
Dogs can talk.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. That is the story of Betty and Barney Hill, An Interrupted Journey. Hope you enjoyed that.
That's incredible. That's a good title, too. I like that.
An Interrupted Journey?
I like that. We're going to borrow that.
We'll run with that. Yeah. Yeah, we'll run with
from
that.
From the book.
Hope you enjoyed that, Dee. I enjoyed doing my research on that because I got sucked in hard.
Thank you, God. You said sucked in hard. that was terrific. Like, I love that type of stuff.
Good. Well, we'll have a lot more of that coming, so. Oh, yes.
Or a Samhain, if you're Irish holiday.
What way do you want to work this? I have some community questions to get to this week.
Okay.
And we can do a very, very short and sweet personal with the pod. Do you want to do community questions first?
Hit me with the community questions, this is what everyone's here to see.
Yes. So if you have used the timestamps to get here, you're very much welcome.
Should have told you.
We can do our little intro thing for the
start. That's right. Yeah.
But if you've used the timestamps, congratulations. Welcome to this part of the podcast. Thank you for submitting your questions to us all week. If you wish to get in contact with us for the next one, honestly, the easiest way to do so is either through Twitter or through Instagram. That is, we'll be a lot more active on those, receiving your questions and getting them all categorized. No, not categorized. Fucking, that's a
compiled.
Terrible. Compiled, yeah. I actually have one that came through Facebook Messenger as well. So thank you to everybody who's got in touch this week.
All channels. I love it.
All channels. We are ready. This one comes from username live_berries.
Nice.
The question is, where are you from? Simple question, dude.
Live berries. We are from... I don't want to speak on your behalf, but we are basically from the same... tiny village.
Yes, we are
in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is back then. Do we do this? Do we reveal to the world?
I mean, I guess. Well,
rather than specifics and generalities,
I mean, most people who listen to this know us anyway and know where we come from.
We're from the back end of beyond.
Yeah, we are. We come from the sticks. We come from a very rural part of Ireland.
We're not even that rural. Like, it's just because when you get out to where we are, we're on the border of Northern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, which is basically, I like to refer to as the forgotten land, where really nobody cares about maintaining it and like improving it because it's so far away from like... If you're in the Northern Ireland, it's so far away from their responsibility, they don't care.
Yeah.
And it's so far away from the South's responsibility that they kind of just leave this little twilight zone where basically anything can happen.
It's a miracle that we even can do this podcast where we live because it's such a dead zone.
We don't get internet. We don't get good phone coverage.
We don't, no.
Mobile phone coverage.
So you better appreciate the damn end of this work when you see this.
We are very... excuse me.
You good?
I'm dying.
Yeah. It's questions hitting them hard.
One of the things as well about where we live... Oh, actually, I should probably mention I haven't lived there for about 2 years.
Yeah, now. I still live very much where like I was brought up.
Where you were born and reared.
Yeah, you've been moved away for some
time. I've been in Belfast. Yeah. Full-time in Belfast for 2 years. But I haven't... I've been in Belfast like on and off like through uni and stuff for like the last like 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
So I'm quite familiar with up here... We're here now today, actually, Belfast, if you look around.
Belfast.
Between Belfast and rural...
Rural Ireland. Rural Northern Ireland.
Northern Ireland. Yeah. We're on the border as well, which means that we get, like... We're the type of people who'd have, like, euros and
Mexican money and the Great British Pound.
Yeah. The Great British Pound. And, we get our... In my house, we get our internet from the Republic of Ireland. We get our phone line from Northern Ireland. Like, it's...
Do you get your internet from the south?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I didn't know that they came across. Like,
three broadband. It's wireless, man.
Oh, wow.
That's
wow.
why. Yeah. Because you don't get any good internet through the phone line in our little...
Well, I get mine from British Tele... What is
BT?
Yeah. What is
British Telecom?
Yeah. British Telecom. Yeah. And I may as well not get it.
Yeah.
It's that bad.
Because you use your phone.
Yes, I use
my phone. Is it roaming or is it you actually getting the good old...
No, I get the good old...
You get the northern signal. You don't have to use that little... that little text saying, no. Welcome to Ireland.
No, like, oh, no.
Like, welcome to Ireland. I'm like, fuck me. I'm at home.
Thank you, live_berries, for that question. Next one comes from Chris86 Cassidy, who asks, if a tree falls in a forest, does it make a sound when it hits the ground? I'm assuming this is the old age.
Oh, yeah, this is the... You know, do you want the philosophical answer?
No, I want to hear a proper answer from you.
Yeah.
Of course it does.
Yeah.
I think.
I'm pretty confident.
You see, the thing with this is the answer was always, well, how can sound exist if no one's there to hear it?
Yeah, yeah.
But there's always someone. Or there's insects. But there's birds.
But there's no one. That's the point, right? There, in this weird hypothetical situation, there is no one. The tree just falls. All life around. Okay, this is what happened.
No,
25 life. Years ago, a nuke landed. Blew this forest to shit, but this one tree survives. It just lingers on for 25 years until one day it just falls. Now, everything else, all life around it is already dead, right?
Everything.
Everything else.
Dead.
Gone.
Not even grass. Good.
This tree is just hanging on and it just copes. Bang. Does it make a noise?
It has to.
I can't comprehend how it couldn't.
Because it has to break the sound barrier. I'm not saying it should move that quick, but it has to break.
It has to move something. Through the air and hit something, right? But I get like the philosophical part.
Why did
where
you
it's
ask
like,
this question?
I get the philosophical part where it's like, but you'd have to be there
to hear it
to confirm. Yeah, is that, what is sound? Is it the thing that comes into your eardrums? Because in which case, then it doesn't make a sound because it doesn't go into your eardrums. Or is it the fact that... Fuck, I hate this question.
I know. We love your community questions, really.
To avoid my brain having to do any more thinking this Saturday morning, yes, it makes a sound because it falls over and hits something. Mm. And that's just how sound works.
So are we saying that it does make a sound?
I'm saying... It does because I can't invest any more thinking power into it right now.
Okay. Thank you for your question, Chris86 Cassidy. We've got a double whammy from the big boy Shawnee Mac.
Oh god.
Two different usernames here though, because I got Shawnee Mac from Facebook.
Oh, very good.
When he was messaging me, and then I have McLaughlin's.
Remember the last time Shawnee Sean, he's gonna call Shawnee dude, messaging, he gave us like a Kevin Bacon game, and he made it the most awkward one ever.
He gave us
two actors we'd never heard of.
Yeah, he gave us what do you call the female Doctor Who?
No, we don't know these, Chris. We don't know who they are, so we don't have to do this again.
Oh yeah, okay.
I don't know who it is. Anyway, I forget.
First question: have you seen Tenet?
No. I really want
no,
to though.
No, I thought I'd elaborate a wee bit more on that question because I knew both of us hadn't seen Tenet. Favorite Nolan movie?
It's tough, but probably Inception.
Okay. I think mine will be Interstellar.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Interstellar.
I love Interstellar.
I do like The Dark Knight.
Yeah, exactly. Shit. Can't forget about The Dark Knight. What's the other one he
but
did?
But I do like McConaughey.
Yeah.
If McConaughey was in The Dark Knight, it would be a perfect movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You give it time, that'll happen. Give it time. What do you call it? We looked into cinemas and stuff. I think you are allowed to go to the cinema.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're doing the bring it back.
Yeah, the COVID restrictions. But there is another thing that we actually, there's a billboard on it just up the street. Drive-in cinemas.
That's right.
I would like to try that out, but they don't have any. They don't have Tenet. They don't have like recent films. But, yeah.
Well, the second question, which I think is just, this is going to get us thinking, Dee. Here's the question from McLaughlin's.
Okay.
Choose one creature to grow each and every one of them to 10 times their current size.
Oh boy.
Little side piece because the question came, another question, a comment came after the question, sorry. I'm expecting you to severely overthink your answers and the environmental effects on a global scale.
Okay. Do you know what my go-to was?
Was yours the same as mine? Mine was an ant.
Oh, okay. No, I went the complete opposite. Like, literally, I went for a blue whale. I would like to see a 10 times bigger blue whale.
Like, but every single one of them has to grow to 10 times.
Yeah. The sea levels would rise, if I did Christ. That.
Yeah, we would all drown.
From displacement. The sea level would fucking rise.
That's the worst.
Say bye-bye to Holland. Sorry, guys.
Oh,
these monsters. But you know what?
We'd all have to go to Cork.
There you go, because it floats.
That's terrible.
That was painful.
Yeah, that was really painful.
But you're going to go for... You're going to go for an aunt?
No, 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 no. That was my original thought.
Okay, okay.
But because every one of them... Do you know the amount of billion ants?
Yeah, I know.
Imagine they have 10 times their size.
But like, what is 10 times the size of an ant?
Well, an ant's about what? Just an inch?
Nah, it wouldn't even be an inch.
Wouldn't that be?
No. Like...
5 centimeters?
No, 5 centimeters. No way.
No, 5 centimeters.
Like 1 centimeter. Okay, 5 millimeters.
Yeah, five. No, yeah.
Maybe 1 centimeter.
What size is an ant? Look that up.
Oh, God, sakes, Chris. We're not prepared for this, you guess.
I mean, dogs? But imagine every dog.
No, no, because...
Don't like chickens outnumber humans like 1 billion to 1 or something?
Imagine that. Oh, my God. You think of, like, you know where they keep them in, like, the sheds? Like,
oh, Jesus.
Like, yeah. Those sheds would all just bust open.
Yeah,
that would be a massacre. They would
start farming us.
They would.
What size is that?
They range in size from 0.75 to 52 millimeters. So, yeah, 5 millimeters. 52 millimeters is 5 centimeters, sorry.
So, 5 centimeters.
So 5 centimeters is about that. So, they can get pretty big.
So, that. So, say 10 times that, which would be 5 inches.
That's big.
Jesus.
But, yeah, that's fucking... That's scarily big.
It's what, nearly my spiders? Phone screen size. But all of them, that size. Like, billions of them. Billions.
Yeah, that's a lot. Rats.
Why don't we just pick an animal that's like really fucking endangered? Because there won't be that many of them, even if they do grow.
But see, that's the problem. Because
like,
if you
like the white rhino or something, there's only like 10 of them left.
But you strongly said think about the environmental effects. If you have 10 white rhinos that now need 10 times the amount of food to survive, you just killed them. Killed them stone dead, because you just put the final nail in their coffin.
Like pigeons.
Okay. Oh no.
10 times we're saying.
Penguins.
Oh, penguins.
Antarctica would sink.
Yeah.
It would just sink down into the ground. Here was my thought with the blue whales, though, right?
You're still on the blue whales.
Just think of how cool it would be to have something like dinosaur-sized, essentially.
Yeah, like, let me look up
the size. The problem, I think, is, right, I don't know how they'd fare. Because they're in water, they'd probably have like a lot of support from the water. But there's like a limit to how big you can make something on the planet Earth because of gravity. Because of a certain size, like the weight of your... Say you made humans massively bigger. At a certain size, the weight of your like midriff, your chest, your torso... gets too heavy for any bone structure to be supported, so your legs would just crush. Doesn't matter how thick you make your bones or whatever, they just there's no material known to man that can withstand that the bigger you go. So I'm thinking with the whales, like they're just gonna
they just
like
kill themselves,
they'd just get massive and then they'd all just like
implode. Oh, dude, that's horrible. Well, I just looked up like female and blue whales, but 25 meters long, so 250 meters.
What? I can't even comprehend. Like,
and how many blue whales is on the planet? And imagine all of them. They'd be bumping into each other in the ocean.
There's a great book. If these type of questions interest you in any way, Shawnee Mack, if you're listening, watching.
Of course he's listening.
You probably actually have already, but if you haven't, definitely check it out. It's called What If? And it's a book, and it's literally just full of questions just like this.
Why have we never got this for the podcast, this book?
I should pick it up. I have it on Kindle. I should get up a physical copy of it. Basically, it's things like, what would happen if we made all the ants in the world 10 times bigger? And then he will go fully into the scientific explanation. One of his best is would happen if you hit a ball, like a baseball, at the speed of light?
Jesus.
It's brilliant. Because it's like, you'd think it'd be like, oh, the ball goes really fast. But what actually happens is because the ball is moving through the air that fast, it turns the like one particle of like oxygen, we'll say, into a plasma because it's that hot that fast. Which then causes this like chain reaction. He says it would basically take a chunk out of the earth.
Jesus.
If you just did that. But anyway, that's completely off topic.
Well,
check that out. What if?
What animal are you saying? You can go blue whales.
Okay. Kill if them all. Not blue whales, I think it's gonna be blue whales though, because I think they'll be okay in the water because you know they don't have to support their own weight because they're floating. So I think they'll be okay. I don't want 10 times bigger of many things.
Oh, red pandas. Because they're cute as fuck.
Those are like the little Firefox
things. So 10 times their size.
But then they're going to be like...
It's just a teddy bear.
No, it's not a teddy bear, Chris. Because it's a real bear at that point. It's bigger than a real bear. Yeah. It'll maul you to death.
Oh, fuck. I don't know.
You need a docile, like a friendly animal. That's why I think penguins is the way to go.
What about just... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's penguins. Penguins is the winner.
I don't know. Penguins would peck you to death.
But they wouldn't. They'd just be like, oh, it's a human. Those are weird.
I suppose they're all in Antarctic anyway.
Yeah, they're isolated. Okay. Actually, there's some penguins in like Africa.
Yeah, that's right, South Africa. Yeah. They'll like all stand on the ice and just push the ice under the water.
Yeah, and then we'll all drown again.
Jeez.
I think there's no way around this. We're gonna drown.
Yeah, drown. Thank you for your question, Shawnee Mack. We'll get back to you on that one. Next question comes from Beardy Creative with Camera.
Ah, oh, I know who this is.
Sebastian, Jolly Bearded Photographer. Yes. Oh, yeah. When are you doing another game night?
We just had one. We just missed out.
I wish we just had one.
I know. Yeah. We should do one soon.
Yeah. I would love another game night. I know what you're talking about. We used to do big LAN parties playing some Modern Warfare 2 and old Call of Duty games, just we plug them all into like one big hub and everyone sit around on their own TV screen and just
have about like go seven ham. Or seven or eight TVs and Xboxes or
we'd
whatever.
We'd have seven or eight monsters and Red Bulls thrown into us as well. They were good times, man. Yeah,
I think whenever the COVID restrictions
blows over,
go away, we'd probably be a lot more able to try something like that.
Yeah, we should just form like a group.
Oh yeah.
You know, for the podcast, that we can all get together, even just online, and play something with each other online.
So the internet exists. Yeah, I keep forgetting about it.
LAN is good. Like
this is related to the first question of where we live. We never had those luxuries of like being able to play online.
But yeah, we could do that. We could set up like a group.
Yeah, that would be really easy to do.
Yeah.
Just pick like a Wednesday night. Boom.
Yeah. Go. And we could just all jump in. Anybody that wants to jump in. That's a great idea.
Get on party chat.
Yeah. Discord.
Discord.
Yeah, we'll do Discord.
I'm going to get the...
Shit, this is a fantastic...
The old school, you know, the Xbox mics?
Yes.
The ones that are like one year.
Yeah.
I love those things.
There we go. Now we've just set something up. Thank you for your question.
What was the answer to the question? Soon.
Soon. Soon. That's every Wednesday night, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question comes from Ordinary Gal.
Ah.
Well, it's OORDINARY.
I like it how ordinary is not spelt the ordinary way.
Okay.
Very clever.
This is a good question, actually. How did you start your podcast? I don't know if this is how, as in like physically how, like how we got it on.
Sit down around the table, start talking.
Like how we got noticed and how we got huge and how we are the
biggest podcast in the greater Katy region.
I think it's just a general question of why, how, that kind of thing. We started the podcast.
It started as a gaming channel on YouTube, as many things do.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to work in Omniplex Cinemas with a couple of guys, and we threw around the idea, and I pissed it to D one night as well.
You pissed it to me?
Pissed it to you.
Yeah.
And we decided that a podcast would actually be good fun to just try.
Yeah, I think it was an extension of the gaming channel. So it started off, we were born as the XZ Gaming Podcast.
That's right, yeah.
The XGP.
Yeah, that's right. It wasn't even, we were just born as XZ Gaming.
Yeah,
and the
yeah.
podcast was like the separate bit that came.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
It was an extension of that. Mm-hmm. And then I think like 30 episodes in-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or something, maybe 40. We rebranded to Empty Promise because we'd stopped doing any gaming stuff on YouTube.
Yeah. It's just so time consuming. Yeah. And anyone that does it, hats off, but it's so fucking time consuming.
And we're not even the biggest gamers because we get into it for about 2 months.
Yeah.
And then we just stop playing games.
I personally get all my gaming news from It's Obvious. And all my, because those guys are great and I enjoy their stuff.
It's Obvious Gaming. It's another podcast you should check out.
Yeah.
I think then, we just decided like there's no point making a gaming podcast when we're not talking or doing anything related to gaming.
And our opening line for the XZ Gaming Podcast was hello and welcome to the XZ Gaming Podcast, home of the Empty Promise.
Yeah, because we are, as you're a frequent listener, you're probably familiar with the fact that we do say a lot of things like, oh, we're gonna get a video up next week of us, we're gonna get a game night going next week. That's one perfect example. We're gonna get a game night going next week, and it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
We just don't have the commitment. So we make a lot of empty promises.
Yeah, we do. We do.
And we're kind of proud of that in a weird way.
To be fair, we've done well since we've kind of come back, you know, from the whole like COVID thing started. Like we've been pretty regular.
Pretty consistent.
And the content, it's getting there again. And the podcast is doing quite well now, thankfully. But we're the two OG members. We're still going strong.
Still going strong.
Yeah.
Regarding like the other like aspect of it, I don't know if there's much interest in that, but like the how was like, I think we literally started, we had like two or three mics for four people.
For anyone that knows the like snowball mics, like the big round mics.
White ones,
we just put them on my kitchen table and we just all sat around and talked about what games we were playing.
It was like USB, plugged it into this and it was Audacity, free piece of software you can get. And that's how
it was born, yeah.
And then from there, the more advanced, like the mixer was bought and these XLR mics were bought and we kind of expanded it from there. But yeah, like
actually paid attention to how our audio sounded on a weekly basis.
We didn't share a mic between two people.
Yeah, I think after like 10 episodes, we started to include video.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Just because we didn't want a thumbnail just constantly as our video.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how the podcast was created.
Yep. It's dead easy. Everyone should do it. And everyone has been doing it as of COVID. Yeah. Everyone's got a podcast.
Everyone loves a podcast. I mean, it's what you do when you're in like your late 20s, isn't it? Yeah. You can start a family or start a podcast. You start a podcast.
And this is
shout out to all of you guys who are starting families at like 20, because that's like
we
struggle to get a podcast out there.
That's one place where the empty promises will not fly when you have a family. It's like, yeah, I'll pick you up from football. Sure.
Thank you for your question. Ordinary gal.
Ordinary.
Next question comes from Ariane Davis. Which of you would win in a fight to the death?
I mean, to the death.
I mean, I don't like to think of myself.
You would kick the ever-living shit out of me in a fight, but to the death, Chris. Don't worry, I got my tricks.
The anger fight dirty, like.
We see that's
if it's to the death, and one of us has to come out, and we're told like, okay, if why oh, fuck this is tough, right?
No, you would win. You don't know why? Because I'd be like, I am gonna fight my best friend. See that? See how I did that?
Don't play the fucking noble card now.
And now he's down himself, and that's when I strike for the neck.
It's jugular.
Use your fingernail and just cut it right open.
Just bite.
Motherfucker.
Rick Grimes.
Dead. Oh, yeah. Fuck me.
But like guns to our head if we had to fight to the death.
I don't know.
Or like guns to like our family's heads and we're told you two have to fight to the death. I'm going to fight dirty. That's how it's going to happen. I'm sorry, but I am.
You're much physically stronger than I am. Mm-hmm. I will admit to that.
But physically strong doesn't...
That's what I'm thinking.
...care for much in a fight. Like,
you know? I think... I've never... Like, in my life...
I don't think I've ever had to fight.
I've never been in a proper fight. I've been like smacked a couple of times.
And you've thrown your fair share of punches at
it. Yeah, I've rumbled and kicked and
exactly.
Made my way out of it somehow. Yeah. But like, I've never actually been in like a proper fight, like with a person.
No, it's like we're not fighting guys. We're
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
There
right?
There you go. Yeah.
But I don't know when you know, I actually had this thought the other day, right? Mm. Kind of scared of it a little, but I was like, if I had to kill somebody,
oh fuck yeah.
I was like, I remember you thinking before, I was like, I don't think I'd have the capacity to kill somebody. Not in cold blood, like, but if they had like a gun to my head, or not a gun to my head, but they had a gun on me and I had a gun and I'm like, I have to kill this person to get out of the situation. I used to think like I'd hesitate, but now the other day I was thinking, I was like, yeah, when you think about it, I don't think I would.
You wouldn't hesitate.
I think the adrenaline just would be pumping and you'd just be like, I understand what I have to do, I'm going to do it. Boom.
I don't believe I'd hesitate in that situation either.
I used to think of that. I'd be like, kind of like morally, like, I don't know if do I have to kill this person? Can I find another way? Nah, fuck it. I'd just kill them.
I don't know if I'd want to fight my best friend to the death, though.
Oh no, not you, not for like, not in some sort of battle royale situation where it's like two friends fight to the death.
Oh yeah, that's rough.
That's interesting though.
Why?
Well, think. Sorry, I'm not getting any ideas. But if it was a fight to the death in that, like, just us in a room.
Oh shit!
And it's like bare knuckle
like
or something.
Like proper saw, like a saw situation.
I've never seen that.
Well, let's say that this door is sealed and the only way to get out is for like
one of us to kill the other.
To drain the other person's blood.
Yeah. But like, I don't, you'd probably win that. Mm-hmm. But if you dropped us into like, let me see, Castle Shane Forest, mm-hmm. and we're like, fight to the death.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Now things get interesting.
Yeah.
And now I get my sneaky advantage. I don't know. I'll say you based on physicality.
I don't know.
And because I'm gonna play the noble card and I'm not gonna fight you.
Well, that's the card I was hoping to play myself. I think questions are just thrown out to try to tear the empty promise apart.
Yeah, that's working.
And I don't like it.
Because I'm already planning how I'm gonna take you out and cancel you.
Once again though, thank you very much for your question. Final one, D, this week comes from Pod for Purpose.
Huh, I like it.
Yeah.
What is the purpose?
And very simple question, D. Blue or green?
Blue.
I hope green.
Shut up. Like, why? What? Green?
I have said this. I think I said it to you. In later years of my life, I've grown... No, it wasn't said to you. In later years of my life, I've grown to appreciate the color green more. I like green.
Okay. All right. Look. This is what's going to tear the Promise podcast apart. Never mind fighting to the death. Look. Green is great.
Green is I love green. A lovely color.
I adore it's peace. Greenery.
It's tranquility. No, well, tranquility is more like
blue. Right? Stop saying what I'm saying. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Green is everywhere.
Yeah, it's lovely.
The human brain is conditioned to spot and notice greenery, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, because that's how we survive.
That's how we survive.
Yeah.
So that's great. Blue is... exotic.
No, I don't think it's exotic.
You don't see many blue things, Chris.
Blue to me is clean. Clinical, maybe.
Nah, I think water.
Pure.
It's kind of clear, to be fair. But I think the ocean.
Pure.
Aqua blue.
Mm. I like
think of the sky.
As my years have gone on, D.
But more so, think of this, Chris. Outside of the sky and on the oceans
and the grass,
what's blue? Only really like.
So you don't get good blue foods. No food should be blue.
What about?
And blueberries are not blue.
They're pretty blue.
No, they're purple.
They're like violet. Mm-mm. What about so natural? You're talking about natural foods.
Yeah,
because you can make pretty much anything blue.
Oh yeah, yeah,
a bit of food coloring. Yeah. So you really argument.
But no food that's good for you is blue.
I mean, you could dye porridge blue. And that's not bad for you. Why not?
Because you're putting dye into it.
Yeah, but it's just color.
Yeah, but it's not good for you.
Is it? Is it really?
There's an abundance of delicious green foods, leafy foods, wholesome, hearty, earthy foods.
That doesn't mean the color green is good.
It does, though. It just does. Green's a lovely color.
Peas are green.
Yeah, peas are delicious.
I don't like peas.
Do you not?
No.
Oh.
So is that why I don't like green? No, I really do like the color green. But if I was to ever pick something in a color, that's the way I've approached this, right?
Mm.
So if you want
if
a cover for your phone.
If there's a choice between a blue car and a green car, I'm not going to pick a green car.
Exactly. What are you going to pick that's green?
I would pick a green cover for my phone. A green t-shirt I would probably pick.
No, over a blue t-shirt? Come on. How many green t-shirts do you have compared to blue t-shirts in your wardrobe? Look at me right now. Look at me right here representing Team Blue.
I have more blue, I think, in my wardrobe than green. I got to get more green.
I don't know. Green is fine. Okay. The big colors for me are probably the primary colors. It's like red, blue.
Yellow?
No, yellow's not so hot.
Black. I used to love like black. Red. Now I don't like red so much.
I don't like red.
Red's a very hateful color.
Yeah, there's anger
yeah.
associated with red. Although some things that are red are pretty awesome.
Yeah. Like?
Tomato soup. It's right across from me there. It looks delicious.
Oh, tomato soup's delicious thing.
What else is red and pretty cool?
You don't get blue soup.
You do not.
No. You get green soup, which is delicious.
Oh, that doesn't sound delicious.
Oh, yeah. Like Well, you don't like peas.
Oh, actually, vegetable soup's kind of green, right? It's kind of greeny yellow.
Spinach. Spinach is like one of the best things on this planet.
I'm sure it is, Chris.
I stand by it.
Spinach is I'm not going to be eating spinach soup anytime soon.
Spinach is so good, man.
Peanut
butter is also green.
It's not green or blue.
No, it's just great, dude.
I'm Team Blue. We talk about this more than we should have.
Yeah, you're Team Blue. I'm team Blue. Green.
Yeah.
Look at that waveform. It's blue.
Yeah.
But look at the wee soundbar above it. It's green.
It's green. And the green does indicate sexy. Good, right, as well. That's another bigger thing.
Green is good.
Green is go. Old. Green is good. Go. It's positive. It's in the affirmative. Red is in the negative. It's the no.
Blue is the neutral.
Yeah, blue is... But
the peacemaker.
Blue doesn't get involved in all that nonsense. True. Blue is over here being blue. It's like, look at me, I'm blue.
Hey, I got blue.
Well, you don't have to infer any meaning from me. I'm just a color. Enjoy me.
Pod for purpose. I'm sure this is exactly what you had in mind when you asked the question. Yeah. Thank you for
next
it.
Week's episode, blue or green? Bleen or grew?
Guys.
What's up, Chris?
I just got another question through. Will super glue stick to a non-stick pan?
So... Okay. My gut reaction?
Oh, fuck.
Yes. Yes, it has to, right?
Yeah. Well, but it's coated with non-stick.
But what is non-stick?
I don't know.
I assume like, non-stick is for like... Fuck. Yeah. No, it's gonna...
Fuck, I don't know. We're gonna have to test this.
Fuck.
Okay. God!
God damn it.
There was so much going on there. I need to reset my brain. That's crazy. But I have to say, thank you so much for the questions.
Oh, they're amazing.
I hope we get the same response next week because just that, doing that, like discussing questions again, it propels this podcast to new
heights.
Yeah, new heights. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much, everybody who's got in touch with questions. Please continue to do so. You can find out where towards the end of this podcast.
Also, or in the comments or on social media or something, let us know, green or blue.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's obviously.
I'll
put a poll up.
There's hashtag Team Blue.
Green ones. Do you want to get a bit personal with the podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we finish up this episode,
what do we do? What do we do?
Well, last night we got together.
Yeah, we had.
And we watched the old years ago when we were in school. We did Moving Image Arts, and we had to come up with like these films, these 5 to 10 minute films. And it's been 8 years, and we decided to sit down and watch some of them. And you know what's that saying, like the problem with wearing rose tinted glasses is that you never see the fires.
Yeah. Well, they were great in our heads. Yeah. And they could have stayed.
Or you never
that
see
way.
The warning signs or something. It's something about rose tinted glasses. Yeah. Yeah. we should have had the glasses off.
The Jesus. Worst part, Chris, is that those melons were still perfect in our brains until we watched them.
Yeah.
We ruined it.
Yeah. No amount of alcoholic beverages could have made them any better last night.
To be fair, I really enjoyed watching them again.
So did I. I loved it. I would happily watch them again. And I'd love to find our first year movies as well.
I would be pumped for that as well. Yeah.
Had a delicious boujum as well.
Yeah, well, it was lovely. Yeah.
Thank you for that. That was delicious.
Yeah, of course.
I went for the burrito.
Yeah, you went with the wrap.
Yeah.
You went with those carbs.
Yeah, I had to get my carbs in.
You appreciate that. Yeah. I went with the bowl.
I'm a carb lover. Anyway, yes, you went for the bowl. Yeah.
It was a good night.
And then he came back and then his burrito.
Oh man, I used to be able to fucking devour two boujons. I never actually did it, but I was always like, I'm ready for more.
It's in my head, I wouldn't.
And now I'm like a very much so full after one.
Yeah.
Type of dude.
I mean, I put away that burrito last night like it was no man's business.
But you'd be a big eater, Chris. Like,
what are you trying to say?
You know damn well I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I am. You'd be
bulking and then cutting and then bulking.
I can pack away a lot of food.
Yeah, that's it. Like, mm-hmm. Your stomach just changes.
It does. It changes with the seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It depends on how much food you put into it.
Yeah.
And it gets used to that. And it's like, you put a lot of food in me, so I'll get bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You don't put enough food in me, I'll get a little bit smaller. Mm-hmm. Not like fucking massive amounts. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Little bits.
I get it. Yeah, what else did you do this week?
Playing Wasteland 3 on the PC.
Yes, that's right.
Gamerbot.
That's right. Seen Laura playing that yesterday.
Yeah. Without me, by the
without
way.
Without you, yeah. What the which fuck? Was. Yeah.
It's fine. It's fine. It we're okay. I literally haven't been up to much aside from like.
You watch anything?
Did we watch? No, because we've been playing that game pretty much. Right. So basically, my evenings round out as finish up work, walk the dogs, come home, put on a bit of food, and then it's like 8 o'clock, 8:30. We play the game for an hour or two, and then it's like, let's get ready for bed. It's fucking. Yeah. Word is the time.
It's all it all blends into one.
It does. It's a big mush. That's why. I'm not saying anything, actually.
No, I know what you're going to say, but I'll bring that up too.
Yeah. Well, whenever you bring that up.
Well, I'll bring it. I left my job. Yeah, I left my job, yeah. I'm no longer employed for Home Bargains, yeah.
That's a pretty big fucking to leave, thing to happen.
Like. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was toying with that decision for a while, but it's time for me to fly the coop. 3 years in senior management in that role. And, yeah, it's time for me to move on.
But yeah, I'm sure you learned a lot.
Yeah,
in there as well.
Like, probably some stuff I didn't want to learn.
Yeah, but it's useful to have that to know what not to do next time or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What to avoid.
So now I'm a free agent.
Well, that's it.
Yeah,
that's good. That's a lot of freedom, man.
Yeah,
that's a lot of freedom.
Gotta take a bit of time and just decide what it is I'm gonna do with my life.
That's it. Like the fact that you can have that bit of time, mm-hmm. It's amazing. Like.
Yeah, big news.
And you won't suffer from the mush. As we just call it. Yeah. You're gonna have very new, different experiences for this next while. So
look forward to it.
It's gonna be. Yeah, whatever may come of it, like it's gonna be a very noble part of your life, Chris.
Yeah, it's I guess sad. Switching jobs. It's sad too, you know. You leave a lot of good people behind.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's true.
It's like leaving any job, I guess. But yeah, I made a lot of friends with Home Bargains.
And the worst part is like you'll keep in touch, but
that'll eventually.
It's always
dwindle.
It's never the same. Like different when you see somebody every day.
Yeah.
Or every other day, whatever.
But yeah, so what were you going to say leading on from that?
No, that was just it. It was just like the mush of like day in, day out kind of routine. You lose a lot of like, actually you lose a lot of life. I guess you kind of do because you're kind of doing the same thing. Like in a week's time, I'm not going to remember what I did last week.
No.
Yeah, which is weird. I'm kind of sad. You kind of wish I was doing more notable things. But things like the podcast are a good way to break that up.
Yeah, yeah. And, thankfully.
That's pretty, like I literally can't think of anything notable, Chris. Oh, I'm about 3/4 to 4/5 of the way through that book, The Alchemist.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. Yes. What do you think of it?
Sorry.
Easy enough read.
It's easy read, yes. I feel like I'm reading the Bible.
Really?
Bit. Yeah. I feel like it's I can kind of sense way. It's a parable.
Yeah. It's
But it's not even a little bit
subtle. Yeah, it's very
that it's a parable.
Yeah.
Like
I even recommended that book. I enjoy that book.
It isn't a bad book. Like, yeah. I can see where it's going. Nice it's like, just. And I feel like I'm being taught something every chapter.
But do you know what you've been taught? Like I said, are you picking up on those lessons or is it I'm being taught and I go on.
I kind of feel like I almost...
Do you reflect on it ever? No?
Sort of. Like I do. I like the bits where it's like achieving your personal legend.
Yeah,
and you have to look out for the omens.
Mm.
Basically, you have to sense whenever
you're not
doing the thing that you really want to do. Yeah. And if you really want to do something, you'll have this is the part, you'll have beginner's luck in a way.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, if this is the right thing for you, it's going to, it should work out. Mm-hmm. And when it stops working out,
it's a sign it's not a right thing. You move on.
Not even that. It's kind of like, now you have to do like, you got the beginner's luck because it was to start you so that you wouldn't just dismiss it. So now you have to put the work in. Like, you had your fortune at the start. Okay. That's the kind of logic behind it. I can see how that applies to life. It's kind of like, once you get into something, you're like, oh, this is great, this is working, this is going.
Yeah, I like it.
It's podcast week in, week out, and then like, you miss a week, and then it's like, oh, fuck. Now you have to do the work to keep your personal, to achieve your personal legend. Or you'll find out that it's not really your personal, it's not your goal after all. I get it. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
It's a sweet little story, just, I think.
It is. I don't know, though.
It's got to finish. To me, it finished well.
Okay, well, that
rhymes out pretty well.
I've met the alchemist, so I'm at that stage.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like he is a traveler in this book, mm-hmm. and he's a traveler in life. Yeah. And I feel like I've not been in any one place long enough to really care.
Yeah.
I like the main
character. Because life's a journey.
Well, that's true, Chris, but it's about the friends you make along the way. Yeah. Isn't it? You know? Yeah.
That would be a perfect point to end this podcast, but yeah, no, I can't. Yeah, no, I forgot I even told you to read that book. Man.
Yeah, I have. It's your book.
Yeah,
yeah.
Completely forgot.
I'll finish it up.
I do. I recommend anybody to read it, just because it's such a small book. It's world renowned, that book.
I know. Yeah, that's why I was shocked. I was like, I can see why probably so many people have read it, but I'm not blown away by it.
Okay. Well, when you're done with it, I'll gift you another book and see what you think.
Okay, it's the Chris Book Club.
Yeah, Chris Book Club. Yeah, that's what we're doing now.
Yeah,
that's a thing.
That's a new segment.
Just like Caging the Beast.
Caging the Beast is now completed. Like, we've done that segment.
Caging the Beast will only take part whenever we're in the studio, because we'll have a picture of Nick Cage up.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I like that.
Okay. I don't think I did much this week either. It was a quiet enough week. I watched Zodiac.
Oh yeah.
Which has got me pretty psyched to delve into that for one of our topics. I also watched Nightcrawler, which is another great movie.
Jake Gyllenhaal again.
Jake Gyllenhaal. And that's it, Dee. I think that's all I've done. I haven't played any games this week.
You played a bit of Zelda, maybe?
No. I didn't. I think it was like last Sunday maybe I played. That was it. No, it's been very, very quiet.
No, that's good. You want a bit of quiet times.
You do.
You're kind of building up to...
A consensus that something's coming.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
I don't know what it is. There's change coming. There's a storm coming, Mr. Wayne.
Oh, man. I'd love to do another Dark Knight...
Marathon?
Rewatch, yeah.
I don't even know if marathon's a good way to watch them movies, because you need to appreciate each one of them.
True.
Over 3 days is a good way.
Over 3 days is a good way to do it. I did the Lord of the Rings over 3 days.
Lord of the Rings is fucking excellent.
That was a good way to do it. I was going to say... We talked before how we're fans of autumn.
Yes.
Have you seen autumn coming in?
Yes, very much so.
It got cold there for like the first time.
It got very cold. We dropped to 5 degrees the other day. 5.
That's killer.
Yeah. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit. It's probably like minus something.
Fucking Fahrenheit. Who cares?
Metrics, right? Like... Imperials. Wait, what are we? We're
metrics.
We're the metrics. Yeah, yeah. I always get that mixed up. They're the Imperials.
Imperials.
Imperial. I took an arrow to the knee. I forget where I was even going with that.
It's getting chilly.
I just need to check one thing, because sometimes I see of news or screenshots or something to mention on the podcast, and then I forget about it, and then I go away. And I come
home back. The empty promises as well. Things we intend to bring up the podcast and it never happens.
No, nothing this week.
Me neither, unfortunately. We didn't do as much preparation as we normally do. Well, actually, I tell that because Chris did loads of preparation for the main topic.
No, I printed my notes and then I wrote all over them.
But for the news and stuff, because last night we were having a few beers and watching those old home movies.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you gotta enjoy yourself.
Yeah, yeah, you gotta enjoy it, man.
Can't be work.
Yeah, it was good to have that talk again and just reminiscing about school and
life
and stuff. Yeah, it's about life. That's what this is.
That's what those movies were about.
Oh, fuck.
They're about life.
Yeah.
But friends you make along the way.
Buried in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
There were so parables. Good. You know, there was lessons to learn there too.
We should turn them into parables.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
The things you could learn from our films. Like, probably not a lot.
How to utilize sound to your advantage.
Diegetic. Non-diegetic.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Ring a bell.
You don't feel uncomfortable when you're recording something?
Okay, let's wrap this fucker up.
Just tilt that fucker to the side.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you for tuning in to what was episode 104. of the Empty Promise podcast. You can find the video version over at youtube.com/emptypromisepodcast, or the audio is available on any podcast hosting service. If you listen somewhere where you are able to give us a like or review, please do so. It helps us out tremendously. And you can get in touch with us on any of our social media platforms. Just search for the handle Empty Promise Podcast. Give us a follow there and get in touch with us, because we'd love to hear your questions as we went through today. And we hope that we can build up another repertoire of those for next week.
Repertoire.
Like that.
Yeah. We could do like a, if we get enough, we get so many we can't even do them in a single episode. We'll do a Q&A
like
episode.
It's quite a lot to get through in one.
It's pretty good though. I definitely prefer 8 than 0. So
yeah,
same, keep them coming.
Oh, we'll have some for next week for sure. But thank you to everybody who contributes to that. And we hope that this podcast finds you well. I think that's all there is to say. Tune in next week for another one.
Goodbye. Friday, Bushy Tail.
Always. I'm starting to forget it. Yeah. In my old age, I'm starting to forget. Yeah, see you next week. Bye-bye.
No, bye-bye.